Hey everybody, Alex Newman here with Conversations That Matter. If you're anything like me, you're probably pretty upset about sending our young men all over the world to fight in no-win wars so that we can leave $80 billion worth of heavy weaponry for mass-murdering jihadists determined to kill us, or for their communist allies. Yeah, true story. With us today is a very special guest. He was actually there, okay? This guy has authority to speak on this. His name is Dan McKnight, just incredible human being. He spent 13 years in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was in the Army. The Idaho Army National Guard. He was over in Afghanistan as part of the Global War on Terror from 2005 to 2007. He actually sustained a non-combat injury and then retired from service. Now he is also the founder and chairman of Bring Our Troops Home, and that's what we really want to talk about. He has an incredible plan that has already been picked up in a lot of places. People are running with it to help protect our National Guard troops from being deployed in these no-win wars. Dan, thank you very much for being with us. Tell us about Bring Our Troops Home and your plan for states to protect their National Guard from these really unconstitutional no-win wars that the federal government keeps launching.
You bet. Yeah, we started our organization just a couple years ago in February of 2019. And the reason we did is because my senator from the state of Idaho, Jim Risch, became the ranking member, the chairman of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. And I had a prior experience with Jim Risch when he was our governor of the state of Idaho, and I was deployed to Afghanistan. And we were there as National Guard troops. Nobody really wanted to take authority or control of us because we were National Guard. And so we were having a hard time getting supplies in country. And so I took a satellite phone, and out of frustration, I climbed to the top of a mountain in the Pesh River Valley. That's in northeastern Afghanistan. And I called Governor Risch and told him, hey, I need your help. You're the commander-in-chief of the Idaho National Guard, and we need supplies. And Jim Risch went to bat for us, and 48 hours later, we had the supplies we needed. And so I always held Jim Risch up as kind of a hero in my mind. And I came home from the war and went dormant for a little bit. I was frustrated and angry at the war effort and what we were doing. But when I heard that Jim Risch had been elevated to now Senator Risch and is now the chairman of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, I thought I'd reach out to him and see if old Jim Risch would do us a solid one more time. And I asked him in an event in Boise, Idaho, what he would do to use his chairmanship to end the forever wars and bring our troops home from Afghanistan. And he said right there in Boise, he did a complete 180 on the Bush doctrine, the Obama doctrine. He said, we're done with nation building. We're through. We're going to end the wars. We're going to come home. And then he went back to Washington, D.C. and voted three times over the next 90 days to extend the wars indefinitely. And so I started a veterans organization made up of Global War on Terror veterans and those that are like-minded, that are now the supermajority of veterans that think that those wars were a waste of time and effort and money and lives, and we're advocating for a change. And we've decided that Washington, D.C. is not the place we're going to make that change. We're going to do it at the state level. And we've created a piece of legislation called Defend the Guard that basically says that the National Guard or the militia of the state will not be deployed under federal service to fight in these overseas wars unless Congress has first done their job, and that is to declare war as required by Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution.
That's fantastic. So this is the Defend the Guard legislation. I understand it's been introduced already in more than 30 states. Walk us through the constitutional reasoning here, because, you know, we know the Constitution does allow the federal government to call the militia into state service. And I know there's a distinction maybe between militia, which the founders understood to be basically every able-bodied man who can carry a weapon, and the more professional, I guess, National Guard troops. But so the federal government has the authority to call up the militia, but there's only certain circumstances where that's allowed. Explain to us the constitutional rationale for state government saying you're not going to deploy our National Guard to foreign countries without a declaration of war.
Sure, great question. So just to get some terms right, the National Guard has been codified as the militia of the state in the early 1900s under the Modernization of Defense Act. So the National Guard is the militia. The militia is the National Guard. In Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15 of the Constitution, which is the militia clause, states that the militia or the National Guard can be called into federal service to repel an invasion, to put down an insurrection, or to enforce the laws of the Union. That's it. That's the only time that the National Guard can be federalized. And a declaration of war from Congress becomes the law of the Union. It becomes the law of the land. Only Congress has the authority to take our nation from a state of peace into a state of war. And absent that proper declaration of war, the National Guard should never be deployed to these overseas misadventures. And unfortunately for us, Congress hasn't done their job. They've abdicated their job to declare war, and they haven't done it since 1942 against Bulgaria, Romania, and Hungary. So every conflict from 1942 through today, we've never properly declared in Congress. We've let the president do it. And that's kind of been the beginning of the destruction of our republic. It's been the creation of an empire, and it's time for it to stop.
Yeah, we'll talk some more about that when we get back from the other side of the break. But so what do you view as the proper role for the U.S. military? And what do you think about the concept? Because, I mean, the Founding Fathers were very weary of a standing army. They did not want a standing army. They authorized the Navy in the Constitution. And I guess in the modern context, we could say Air Force, maybe Space Force. All right, you know, that's not something that the local community can build on its own. But the Founding Fathers really had this vision of just the men of the community serving as the militia, kind of like it was during the founding era. And we've really moved away from that. And I feel like it's given the U.S. government a kind of a temptation to just go use it. Well, we have this giant professional army. And I mean, there's a country over there that needs to be reformed because we don't like the way they treat their women. Let's go send our troops over there. What do you see as the proper role for the U.S. military? Are there any kind of changes, not just in the way that it's used, but in the structure that it has that you think would be appropriate?
Sure. The way I think the military should be used appropriately is probably not the better question. The better question would be whatever Congress deems to be the proper role of the government, of the military, is what we would expect to have as a republic. So our elected representatives, the people that actually live in our communities and represent us and temporarily have our voice in Washington, D.C., if they debate and vote for a declaration of war to use the military to go into one of these countries overseas or abroad, then we as citizens, we can hold our elected representatives responsible if we don't agree with the decision. But when they abdicate their role and responsibility and let the president, a single person, basically a king, take us into a state of war with no justification and no vote from Congress, we're no longer a republic. And so personally, I think the military should be used for defense of the nation, period. No overseas offensive operations, no regime wars, no shadow wars, no ghost wars, no colonization of Africa. That's not what the military is for, and it certainly shouldn't be used to build schools and roads and water treatment facilities and ensure free and fair elections in Afghanistan. The Constitution does not call for a standing army in the United States. However, the militia or the National Guard should be the fighting force of the United States. We should be the ones that fight our wars, but it should be done properly, and that's with a declaration of war from the elected representatives of the people who then have to go home and explain to their neighbors, explain to their constituents, why they authorized another war, another opportunity for the sons and daughters of America to go fight and die in some foreign land.
And what's going on with the legislation? So it's been introduced in a lot of places. What kind of arguments are you hearing from legislators? Have any governors mentioned this? What is the kind of sentiment out there on this bill?
Sure, it's an uphill fight. I'll be honest with you. But 31 states, we found liberty-loving legislators that understand the context of the Constitution, and they're supporting it with vigor. Most of them are veterans that have served in the global war on terror. The biggest opposition we face is when we show up at introductory hearings or print hearings or the introductory phase in the state legislatures. We're finding that the National Guard Bureau is sending a 2 or 3-star general to testify against the bill. And so you'll have a bunch of disgruntled, angry, as they're calling us, veterans who served in the war testifying in favor of it. We've got legislators that are freshmen, sophomores, maybe third-term legislators that are sponsoring it. And a general with multiple stars on his collar and a chest full of ribbons is showing up and saying the same argument. Jobs, money, security. Well, no president in the right mind would ever pull money from a state because the state objected to the improper use of the military. It'd be political suicide. And so these generals are doing what generals do. They're protecting their legacy. They're protecting the general mill, which is, you know, producing more and more generals daily, because when they get done, they want to be able to roll out of bed in the morning after they've retired and take up one of those $1 million a year consulting jobs with the defense contractors in Washington, D.C. It's the destruction of America, and Eisenhower had it right. Beware of the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, the military-industrial complex, that used to be a conspiracy theory, and yet it's becoming more and more clear, especially in Afghanistan. So many individuals and entities made so much money, and yet the American taxpayer, trillions of dollars in debt, so many American soldiers lost their lives. It's just an absolute travesty. We're going to be going to a break in just a moment. But on the other side of that break, we're going to get back into what you can do, Mr. and Mrs. America, to help protect your National Guard from being deployed in these lawless, no-win, undeclared wars, and why you should get involved as well. So stay tuned. This is Conversations That Matter. We'll be right back. Hey everybody, Alex Schumann here again. This is Conversations That Matter. We're still with our special guest, Dan McKnight. He is the founder and leader of Bring Our Troops Home. It's an organization dedicated to protecting our troops, to bringing them home from these unconstitutional, undeclared wars. And they're working on a model legislation that they've had introduced already in 31 states, the Defend the Guard Act, that would prohibit the use of a state's National Guard in overseas combat missions unless Congress had first properly declared a war. And you've been overseas. You've been in these combat missions, Dan. Tell us why you don't think that's a good use of our military. I mean, we saw Iraq. We saw Afghanistan. Those are still fresh on everybody's minds. But before that, we had Vietnam. Before that, we had, Korea. We've had a whole bunch of these. And it seems like America never wins. What are your thoughts? Where did we go wrong here?
That's a great question. You know, in 2 years ago in December, there was the release of the bombshell report, the Afghanistan papers. And those were lessons learned done by investigating general John Sopko, where he went in and looked at Afghanistan and what were the problems and what caused us to be there for, 18 years at the time, now 20 years. And I believe the same thing that John Sopko did is that we didn't understand what we were getting into in Afghanistan. We rushed into it. We went in there with a blanket authorization of use of military force from Congress, which is not a declaration of war. They gave President Bush the blank check to go anywhere for any length of time, for any amount of money, anywhere in the world that he deemed necessary to defend American interests. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to work. And when you give that kind of blanket authorization, Congress, the representatives of the people, lose the ability to call these people before their powerful committees in the Senate and the House and make them answer questions like, why are we there? What is our mission? What is our goal? What is the end game? And so there's just literally been no oversight from Congress. We're not meant to have a country run by the military. We're meant to have a military that's run by Congress, which is controlled by the people. That's the way a republic works. And so the proper role of the military in Afghanistan should have been to go in there and avenge, obviously, 9/11. That was a proper response. The people that attacked us were all dead already, but the people that aided them and helped plan the attacks lived in Afghanistan. And we went there on October 7th. That's the start of the war. We were done and completed the mission, except for killing Osama bin Laden by February of 2002. We should have come home. And we didn't. We took our eye off the prize, and instead George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, the evil Dick Cheney and his wonderful war profiteer daughter, decided to take us into Iraq. And we took the eye off the prize in Afghanistan, and we ended up staying for 20 years. And we never really knew what we were doing there. I saw the mission change while I was there in 05, 06, and 07. It changed from a war-fighting effort to a nation-building effort right before our eyes. And we all wondered at the end of every day, what in the heck are we doing here?
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, I was still in middle school when the Afghanistan war started, and it was supposed to be to get the terrorists, and then suddenly it was, we're going to nation build, we're going to reform their society, we're going to change their culture. And of course, none of that happened. The Taliban is now back in charge. As far as the two parties, I mean, it seems like they're both pretty much in agreement. You know, Obama ran on a, hey, I'm going to stop the wars. Bush ran on a, hey, I'm going to stop the wars. And yet Bush launched, the global war on terror. Then Obama partnered with Islamist forces on the ground in Libya and overthrew the government there. Then they wanted to go do the same thing in Syria. Is this a bipartisan problem? Do you think one party is more guilty than the other? What are your thoughts on who's to blame for all this?
Sure. Throughout history, I would say that the left has been most resistant to war and the right has been most likely to go to war. But the war party, neither Republican nor Democrat, the war party is the powerful party in Washington, D.C. Every major building, tall skyscraper filled with steel and glass in Washington, D.C. is not filled with anything other than military contractors, right? The military, the war party is in control, and that's the problem. And war hawks like Liz Cheney, like Lindsey Graham, and Dan Crenshaw and some of the others they would like to see our nation in a state of war forever, right? Liz Cheney is the heiress to a war profiteer fortune. And she told our organization to our face in her office that she would keep troops in Afghanistan forever, forever. And when we proposed the Defend the Guard legislation in Wyoming, members of her staff contacted legislators in the Wyoming State House and interfered in their business and told them that if they passed the Defend the Guard legislation in Wyoming, that Liz Cheney herself would personally see to it that two of their National Guard C-130 aircrafts were taken from their state and sent to another state. The war party has far-reaching tentacles. And it is led by people like Liz Cheney. And it's so important now that we fight back and defend our republic from this tyrannical form of government that we've found ourselves in. And we're seeing things, our global war on terror is producing things in our country that most people can't make the connection between. You know, the government spying on our phone calls and censoring our speech, that's a product of our wars, right? The government making unilateral dictatorial demands such as the vaccine mandate, that is a response to the way we've allowed the executive branch to take control of everything from wars on down. We have to fight back. We have to defend our republic. And the way to start is by taking control of our military and our foreign policy and the way we deal with the world and focus on what we can do inside of our own borders. And that's why we've taken the fight back to the states. The 10th Amendment may be the most important amendment in the Constitution as long as we stand up and use it properly.
Yeah, this is so powerful. I'm so glad you're out there advocating. So how would it, say somebody's watching this and they think, wow, I want that in my state. Where do they go? What steps do they take? I mean, do you have a draft resolution that they can give to their state representative or their state senator? Walk us through the process of getting a state on board with this. And what would it look like if and when it succeeds in a state and then maybe more than one?
Yep, absolutely. So if you go to, we have a website set up specifically for the legislation. It's defendtheguard.us. And there's a map on there and you can click on your state and find out if the bill's been sponsored and who is supporting it in your state. We're about ready to make some changes to that website where you'll be able to actually send letters to your representatives from the website asking them to support the bill. So I'd ask you to go to that website first and see if it's in your state. And if it's not, you can make a recommendation to us on a legislator that you think would be willing to sponsor the bill. And then our organization, we do the heavy lifting. We draft the legislation. We line up veterans to come and testify before the committees in the legislature. We write op-eds and guest opinions for the local newspaper. We do call in on radio shows in the local markets. We'll even help defeat those that oppose the legislation, which we're working on doing in several states right now. Our group is growing. We're getting stronger. Our process is getting better. We were a bunch of rookies. We didn't know what we were doing 2 years ago when we started this. None of us are political operatives. But now our organization, you know, is 30,000, 40,000 strong, and we're getting bigger every day. And seeing what happened in Afghanistan just last week, or 10 days ago with our commander in chief, the way he left Americans behind, people are fired up and they don't want to see their neighbors, their friends, their brothers, their sons and daughters going off to fight in these misadventures ever again and being left behind by a government that just doesn't care about the bottom line. So go to defendtheguard.us if you want information about the legislation. BringOurTroopsHome.us is our organization's website where you can find out about us and where we're at in the media and some things that we're doing. And if you feel like you really can give a little bit of money to help, the 10-7 Club, 10-7, October 7th, is the date that the ground war in Afghanistan started. 10-7club.com is where you can donate and become a member of our support organization, where we give away guns every couple months to people that donate. We have drawings and we try to get people involved. And those are the three places, but I'd really love people to start with defendtheguard.us.
Defendtheguard.us. Go there, folks, and you can find out if your state has this legislation introduced, who's behind it, and what you can do to help. And we've got less than a couple of minutes left, Dan, but just, you know, what would happen once a state passed this? I mean, do you foresee litigation? I mean, is the federal government going to sue? Is it going to be a done deal? What do you think happens if and when this bill passes and gets signed into law?
Certainly. I think the ultimate goal would be to get this bill passed in a state and then have the federal government or some other party sue the state and have it be taken up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has already chimed in on this process, sort of. There was a case before the Supreme Court, Perpich versus Department of Defense, where the governor of Missouri, I believe it was, or Minnesota, wanted to keep his National Guard from going to Central America under Reagan to build roads as a training exercise. And the Supreme Court said that you can't stop the National Guard from going overseas to train, but specifically didn't talk about combat. So with the Perpich decision, we think that they left that out on purpose because they wanted that to come back to the courts again so that the courts could specifically state when the militia could go to war. And so we welcome legislation that would bring that kind of a lawsuit and Supreme Court attention, especially with the current makeup of the courts.
Fantastic. And so I assume you guys have put some thought into this and you're ready for the litigation when it comes. So,
absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, Dan, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the program. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for your service defending the United States. The people of America appreciate it and salute you all. We hope we'll have you back in the near future once you guys get this passed in some places and we can give people an update. In the meantime, folks, go check out the website. It's bringourtroopshome.us, defendtheguard.us, or 107club.com. I'm Alex Newman. This is Conversations That Matter. Until next time, God bless you all.